from chapter 7 of the Bhagavad Gita, verse number 23. Antavat tu phalam tesham tat bhavati alpamedhasam devan devayajah madbhakta yanti mam api antavattu phalam tesham tadbhavatyalpamedhasam devan devayajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Kindly repeat. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Continuing with our discussion on demigods, this is the third session we are having on demigods. Just to recapitulate a little bit, what was the main point of our discussion last time? What was the sum and substance of the discussion last time? Does anyone remember? Very correct. Different destinations for different kinds of worship. It is a misconception that whatever you worship, whoever you worship, whatever be your mode or form of worship, that you will attain the same destination. That is not true. We saw the shloka from the Isha Upanishad. It said, Anyad ahur anyad evahur sambhavad, anyad ahur asambhavad, iti shushramadhiranam yenastad vichachakshire. Which means that one result is obtained by worshipping that which is supreme, and another result is obtained by worshipping that which is not supreme. Who is supreme? Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. If you worship Krishna, you get one result. If you worship anyone else apart from Krishna, you get another result. Now, there was one example that was given last time. Does anyone remember that example to understand how different modes of worship or different kinds of worship lead us to different destinations? Does anyone remember? Yes? 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 Yes. Very correct. You see, different forms of worship lead you to different destinations. For each destination, you always have to purchase a ticket. Correct? If you have to travel by train, you must purchase a ticket exactly for that destination. If you want to go to Delhi, you have to purchase a ticket for Delhi from the railway counter of the Indian Railways, and then sit on the train that you have bought the ticket for, that is bound for Delhi. You cannot simply buy any ticket from anyone and sit on any train at any time and expect to reach Delhi. Correct? So the Indian railway counters, they are something like the Vedas, because there are destinations for different fares. Different destinations all are available in the Vedas. Where do you want to go? If you want to go to the planets of the demigods, just pay the fare, perform particular kinds of worship, and you can go there. If you want to go to Pitriloka, as we saw last time, worship the forefathers and you will go to Pitriloka. Like that, if you worship Krishna, then you will go back to Krishna's abode. So like that, we saw the different destinations, different worship, and it is a big misconception that all paths lead to the same goal. They do not. Inasmuch as all roads leading from, starting from Bombay, do not end up in Delhi. Some go to Madras, some go to Calcutta, some go to so many different places. There is only a particular road that goes to Delhi, and we must follow that. Similarly with Krishna worship. Now, here also in this shloka, Lord Krishna is saying the same thing in the last two lines. Devan deva yajo yanti mad bhakta yanti mam api. He repeats what he has discussed earlier on. He says the worship, those who worship the devatas, they will go to the planets of the devatas, and those who worship me will come to me. Mad bhakta yanti mam api. Now there are some unscrupulous commentators on the scriptures, and they sometimes also take on the position of being gurus or spiritual masters, and they teach that after all, everything is God. Without God, nothing can exist. God includes everything, which is also correct. Not that they are wrong in so far. But then they say, because God is everything and everything is God, therefore you can worship anything. They even sometimes quote certain passages from the Srimad Bhagavatam, where there is one shloka in particular which is part of the original four shlokas, the Chatush Shloki of the Bhagavatam, where Lord Krishna explains that before this creation, it was only He who existed. During the creation, it is only He who exists. And after the annihilation of the whole creation, it is only He who will exist. In other words, Lord Krishna is the only reality. There is no reality apart from Lord Krishna. All other so-called realities are only to be seen in relation to Lord Krishna. So that is the understanding. So these people, they say that after all, God is everything and everything is God, so you worship anything. So they say, someone propagates, you can even worship the bull on the street. You can worship a stone. You can worship any light. You can worship anything you like. And then you will reach the same abode. Now how do we refute such a philosophy? Can anyone answer? What argument can we give to such people? You will find many people like this who advocate different kinds of philosophies. And unless we are very firmly rooted in the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, as it is understood in the bona fide parampara of devotees coming from Lord Krishna himself, we will sometimes be a little disturbed by such philosophies. So what is the argument? If somebody were to come and tell you, do you refute that everything is Krishna or everything is part of Krishna? Then why should we not worship everything? What would be your answer? Yes, and? Sorry? But if Krishna is in everything, then why not worship anything? Yes? Yes, but then everything is Krishna, so everything is supreme. Therefore you are God, I am God, this stone is God, buffalo is God, everything is God. Yes? But I am saying that one is everything. We are servants of the Lord, but they don't say it like that. They say that everything is God. Therefore, anything if you worship, it's as good as worshipping God. Why? It doesn't free you from the liberation of, from the cycle of birth and death, but why? The hint. The East Upanishad shloka that we quoted. You worship that which is supreme, you get one result. Yes? What is that? Can everything do everything? In other words, you're in the right direction. In other words? Very good, that's going in the right direction. So we come to a very important point. And that point is that everything is coming from Krishna. When we say that God is everything, we mean that everything is coming from God. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate. He says, everything, whether it is material or spiritual, is simply emanating from me. There is nothing that doesn't come from God. And in that sense, God includes everything. In fact, in the whole Vedanta Sutra, the very first line is, Janmadyasyataha. That this is the definition of God. The preliminary definition of God is He from whom everything emanates. He is the source of everything. So now we must distinguish. The bulb is the source of the light. The horn is the source of the sound. So does that mean the bulb and the light are the same? Does it mean that the sun and the sunshine are the same? Yes or no? But they are the same also. If there was no sun, there would be no sunshine. And without the sunshine, what is the meaning of the sun? Sun is the source and sunshine is the energy. In other words, we must distinguish between two things. The energetic and the energy. The source of the energy and the energy itself. Now both the source of the energy and the energy are simultaneously one and different. They are one also and simultaneously they are different. In the daytime, we may not be seeing the sun directly when we are sitting inside the room. But we say the sun is in our room. It is not that the sun is physically in our room. But the sunshine is there. So we understand simultaneously the energy and energetic are different. And at the same time they are one also. But at the same time we understand that the original source is more important. Because without the bulb there will be no light. Like that, Krishna is a source of everything. And everything else is simply his energy. In this material world, everything is going on simply by the process of the interaction of Krishna's energies. There are two principal energies in this material world. What are they? What are the two energies of Krishna in this material world? Spiritual and material. Of course, Krishna has infinite energies. But just for convenience, it is segregated into two, material and spiritual. So the spiritual energy is the Jivatma, the spirit soul, the real you and the real me. And the material energy is this material world. So the whole cosmos is simply functioning due to the interaction of these two. And everything, whatever we see in this material world is simply a transformation of Krishna's energies. So we should know that energy, if you worship the energy, you get one result. If you worship the energetic, you get another result. So what to speak of the demigods who are also Krishna's energy? Even the stone, the buffalo, the bull, everything is Krishna's energy. So naturally there is a difference between worshipping the energy and worshipping the energetic. And even in the energy, there are different kinds of energies. And depending on which kind of energy you worship, you will get different results. The demigods, they are also energies of Krishna. They are parts and parcels of Krishna, as somebody has said earlier on. So therefore, in keeping with that one verse in the Ishopanishad, because they are worshipping the energetic, they are getting different results. So we should be very vigilant. This is called the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva, which means simultaneously being one and different. This is a philosophy that was put forward by Lord Chaitanya and explained very, very elaborately. In a very exacting way, he has presented these teachings of Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. You see, in spiritual life, there are two very well-known philosophies which are apparently at conflict with each other. One is called the Dvaita philosophy, which explains that God is different and the individual living entity is different. And the Advaita explains that all are one. God and you and I, we are all the same. That is called monistic philosophy. And the other is called dualistic philosophy. So, the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva by Lord Chaitanya explains and harmonizes these two very nicely. Lord Chaitanya explains, why are you fighting? You Dvaitas and Advaitas, actually both of you are correct, but not completely in and of yourselves. God and the Jivatma is one, at the same time is different. Because there is a principle of oneness and difference, energy and energetic. The Jivatma is also an energy of Krishna. So in the Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna has given us a hint about this Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Actually very directly he has explained. In the 7th chapter, verse number 12, he says, Matta eveti tan vidhi natva aham teshu temai. He says, I am in one sense everything, but yet I am independent. So I am everywhere, yet as a person, I am distinct, I am aloof, I am staying separately. And therefore we can understand from this conclusion that the powers that the demigods have, that is also coming from Krishna. The same powers are being reflected through the demigods. The demigods are separate, different individuals. But the powers that they have, they are coming from Krishna. in the Brahma Samhita. The Brahma Samhita is a very beautiful poem that is written by Lord Brahma. And in this poem, Lord Brahma is extolled. He has glorified Lord Krishna. And in two wonderful shlokas here, he is explaining, Brahma is glorifying Krishna in terms of the demigods. He is saying all the powers that the demigods have are coming simply from Krishna. So, this verse goes as follows. Bhaswan yathashma shakaleshu nijeshu teja swiyam kiyat prakatyatya abitalpa api tadvadatra brahma yesh jagadanda vidhana karta govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. What this verse means is that the sun is shining in full brilliance and its brilliance is being reflected even through ordinary gems. What are gems after all? They are simply stones. Just like that, Govinda or Lord Krishna is the source of original power. And his power is being reflected in tiny quantities. It is being channelized through the medium of these devas or the devatas like Brahma, who are pious living beings who then get the power to actually run the whole universe. And in the next shloka, Brahma talks about Lord Ganesh. Very recently, we have just concluded Ganesh Chaturthi, the celebration where many, many people in Maharashtra, they have celebrated this festival with great pomp and gaiety. But unfortunately, most of the worship of Lord Ganesh has not been done with a proper understanding. Here in this shloka, Lord Brahma is explaining what is the position of Ganesh. He says, Yat pad pallava yugam vinidhaya kumbha dvandve pranamasa samayesa ganadhi raja vignan vihantum alamasya jagatrayasya govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. He says, Lord Ganesh, who is Ganadhi Rajah, what is the function of this Ganadhi Rajah? His function is Vignan Vihantum Vignaharta. Lord Ganesh is also called Vignaharta, isn't it? Which means he removes all the obstacles from the path of your progress in life. So he is Vignaharta, also called Vigna Vihantum. So Brahmaji explains, Vignan Vihantum Alamasya Jagatrayasya. He removes the obstacles in the path of the material progress of all the three worlds. But where is he getting his power from? He is getting his power from Krishna. Brahma explains that Lord Ganesh has two tumuli, right, from his elephant head. And he says on these two tumuli, he is always keeping very reverentially the two lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And he is worshipping them. Because the lotus feet of Lord Krishna are the source of the power that Lord Ganesh has, by which he removes obstacles from the path of all living beings in all the three worlds, Jagatrayasya. So actually Lord Ganesh is a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. So when we pray to Lord Ganesh, we should pray with this understanding that most people in this world are praying to you for removing obstacles in the path of material progress. But I am not so much interested in material progress. So, my dear Lord Ganesh, you please kindly remove all the obstacles from the path of my bhakti to Lord Krishna. Then Lord Ganesh is very pleased. Lord Ganesh's right hand is always extended forward in giving blessings. So, he gives blessings as a matter of duty when you ask for material benedictions. But he is not very pleased. But when you ask for Krishna bhakti, therefore, then he is very happy. Therefore, even outside our temple here, you will find Lord Ganesh is there. So every time we enter the temple, we pray to him that please help me to become a good devotee of Lord Krishna. And surely, then Lord Ganesh will remove all the obstacles from the path of our devotion. So this is the correct understanding of worshipping Lord Ganesh. Not that we should think that Ganesh is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead or Brahma is the Supreme Lord. In fact, the worshippers of the demigods, they very often make this mistake. They consider the demigods to be supreme. They start thinking that, my dear so-and-so, whichever demigod they are worshipping, that I have been worshipping you so faithfully. Now I know I have full faith that you will grant all the benedictions and fulfill all my heart's desires, and therefore you are the Supreme Lord. But this is only out of ignorance. They do not understand that all the powers of the demigods are coming only from Krishna. And it is because of that they are able to manifest. Actually, it is Krishna only who is fulfilling the desires of the demigods, of the worshippers of the demigods. But he does it through the agency of the demigods. And one who worships the demigods according to scriptural injunctions, very quickly he will come to understand that actually even the demigods, they are not the supreme. the Supreme is Krishna. And then they will understand and begin to worship Krishna. So this is the process of gradual elevation of our consciousness. So in this way we see there is facility for all people. And those who want to worship Krishna, go to Krishna Loka. Those who worship the demigods, they go to the demigods. So Krishna is explaining in this verse that those who are worshipping the demigods are actually less intelligent. Alpa medhasam. Why are they less intelligent? Because whatever we get from the demigods is temporary. The demigods themselves are temporary. So how can they give us anything that is permanent or eternal? You know the story of Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad, who was begging for so many benedictions from Lord Brahma. And when he understood that Lord Brahma actually is not the Supreme Lord, then he began to ask so many different, put so many different conditions in his benedictions. That I should not be killed at daytime or in the night. I should not be killed inside or outside. I should not be killed by any weapon or by hand. I should not be killed by man or beast. I should not be killed in the land or in the water. So many conditions. Why? Because he wanted to be immortal. But Brahma had no power to make him immortal, because Brahma himself is immortal. His lifetime is very large. Specifically, it is about 311 trillion years. So large that practically speaking, it may appear to be infinite. But actually, in the time span of eternity, it is simply a flash. So therefore, even Brahma, he could not grant eternity. But yet, Hiranyakashipu wanted to please Brahma. So if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see in Hiranyakashipu's prayers that he tries to glorify Brahma. That you are the Lord of everything, you are the supreme cause of all causes. So he actually glorifies him as if he is the Supreme Lord. So we must have very clear understanding about who is the Supreme Lord, what is his name, what is his form, what is his personality, how to worship him. Otherwise, we will be misled. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a nice narration about a muni called Atrimuni. Atrimuni's wife's name was Anasuya. So Atrimuni performed very severe penances. He was not a pure devotee of the Lord, but he believed in God. And he wanted to worship He who is supreme, Jagat Ishwara, the Ishwara of this universe. So he began to call out. He didn't know the name of this Ishwara. Who is this Ishwara? So he just began to worship He who is controlling this universe, Jagat Ishwara. And he began to perform very, very severe penances. And after many years, then Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, all three appeared before him. Because when he called for Jagat Ishwara, all three thought he is calling for me. Brahma thought, I am the creator of this universe, therefore he is calling for me, so he came. Shiva thought, I am the destroyer of this universe, so I am also a controller, so he is calling me, so he also came. And Lord Vishnu, he is really the controller, so he came. And anyway, Lord Vishnu is the one who is sustaining everything. Even though Brahma is creating and Shiva is destroying, even their powers are coming from him, and he is the one who is sustaining everything. So therefore he also came. All three of them came simultaneously on their respective carriers. Brahma, what does he ride on? On the swan. And Vishnu, what does he ride on? On Garuda, the eagle. And then what about Lord Shiva? What does he ride on? On Nandi, the bull. So all three of them came on their respective carriers. And when Atrimuni saw, then he was puzzled. But as soon as he saw them, he recognized them by their carriers. Just like different people have their own symbols, isn't it? So the devatas, they also have their symbols. So upon seeing them, he understood these were very exalted personalities. So he immediately offered his dandavats, his prostrated obeisances. And they were glowing with effulgence. So he looked up and he said, my dear lords, I do not understand what is happening. I called for Jagat Ishwara. I am sure I must have called only for one of you. I never called for all three of you. But all three of you have come. So kindly let me know which one of you is the Lord of my prayers. I do not know. You have to tell me. So I have called only for one. But why is it that all three of you have come? So they all smiled very benevolently. Now actually, if you simply call for controller, there are so many Ishwaras. But in the Brahma Samhita, Brahma explains, ஈஸ்வர பரமகிருஷ்ண சச்சிதானந்த விக்கிரக அநாதிராதிர் கோவிந்த சர்வ காரண காரணம். There are many Ishwaras in this world. Even the ant is an Ishwara in his own society. The dog is an Ishwara or a controller in his own society. There are some dogs that are more powerful than other dogs. In the cat society, there are more some cats powerful than others. So Ishwaras exist in all societies. The demigods are Ishwara as far as we are concerned because they are so powerful. But the Lord of all Lords, the Supreme Lord of all, the cause of all causes, the original primeval Lord, Ishwara Paramaha Krishna, is only Krishna himself. So therefore, he just called for Ishwara. He didn't call for Param Ishwara, the Supreme Lord of all Lords. So then all three of them came. So they began to explain that since we have come, now we must grant you a benediction. What did you ask for? He had asked and prayed for a son just like Krishna. That was the object of his prayer. Now, Srila Prabhupada in his comments to this section in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he explains that because he prayed for a son like Krishna, he was not a pure devotee. On the other hand, Prabhupada explains that Devaki and Vasudev, who were the parents of Krishna, they were pure devotees. Why is that? Because in the previous life, Devaki and Vasudev, they were Prishni and Sutapa respectively. And they had performed very severe penances. But their penance was to get Krishna as their son. And Atri Muni performed penances to get a son like Krishna. There is a difference. Have you got the difference? Prishni and Sutapa wanted Krishna directly, the same Krishna, to be their son. He said, Krishna, you please come as our son directly. But Atri Muni said, we want a son who will be as strong as you, as good as you. So we want a son like you. So then, they said, all right, we will come and we will grant you that request. So then all the three lords, they incarnated. And then Brahma came as Soma. Shiva came as Durvasa Muni. You all heard of Durvasa Muni, the saint, the mystic yogi with very fierce temper. And Vishnu became Dattatreya. So Dattatreya is also an incarnation of Vishnu. So therefore he is also included in the list of 24 avatars given in Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, because Atri Muni had a desire to have someone like Krishna, so it is considered to be a material desire. Whereas Yashoda and Devaki and Vasudeva wanted Krishna and not someone like Krishna, so they are considered pure devotees. So we can see that Atri Muni was bewildered because he couldn't identify who is Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord, what is his name, what does he look like. So when all three came, he couldn't identify. So we should not be in that position. We should be very clear. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Shri Krishna. We will see him very shortly on the altar in just about 15-20 minutes time. So we should know that Krishna exists exactly as he is, like this in the spiritual world. And this is the Krishna to whom we must pray, to whom we must worship. And then we'll be very clear. At the time of death, there will be no confusion. Then Krishna will appear and only Krishna. Of course, at least for Atri Muni, these three lords appeared. It shouldn't happen that at death, the Yamadutas appear for us. The Yamadutas, they are messengers of Krishna. The messengers of Yamaraj, I beg your pardon. And Yamaraj is also an agent of Krishna. And he is responsible for sentencing different living beings according to their karma. So for sinful beings, Yamaraj sends the Yamadutas. But for those who are worshipping Krishna or Lord Hari, then it is beyond bounds. For anyone who is chanting the names of Lord Hari, then no one can come and touch that. The Yamadutas cannot come and touch such a person. So therefore we see that we should be very clear about who is the Supreme Lord and we should worship only him. Because Krishna is eternal, therefore he can grant us an eternal benediction. The devatas or demigods, however powerful they may be, they are still mortal, and therefore whatever benedictions they can give, they will not be eternal. We want to get out of the cycle of birth and death. We want to regain our original position as Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But the demigods cannot grant us this. Another name of Krishna is Mukunda. Mukunda means one who awards liberation. Because it is only Mukunda who can give liberation, not the demigods. As we saw in the case of Hiranyakashipu asking Brahma. And then later on, Brahma had to chastise, Lord Krishna had to chastise Brahma. that you go around granting such difficult benedictions and then I have to come and solve all the problems. So that is why it is called less intelligent to worship the demigods. If you are worshipping, might as well worship for that which is eternal. Why should you compromise? Why should you settle for anything less than eternal? Why should you settle for anything less than Satchit Ananda? It is your birthright to be restored to that position of Satchit Ananda. We are all Satchit Ananda. So why should we simply settle for some temporary life of just a little bit of material pleasure? Because as you know, in this world, there is nothing like pure material pleasure. As you know very well, everything in this world comes mixed. It comes adulterated. Nothing is pure now. Whether it is cement, material distress, you cannot have one without the other. So therefore, it is less intelligent to seek any benefit that is temporary. So Lord Krishna says, those people who worship the demigods, they are altamedasam. Because the fruits that they get from these demigods is antavattu phalam tesham. It is limited and it is temporary. What is our real disease in this material world? Can anyone say? Yes? No, not desire. Because if we desire to serve Krishna, then that desire is proper. Material desires. And because of material desires, we have acquired this material body. So in the Shastra, the word that is used is Bhavaroga. Bhavaroga means, rog means disease. Bhava means material existence. So this material existence is our disease. Sometimes people think that simply if they invent some new cures for some diseases, or if they are able to simply go around and give relief in matter of medical health, then they are doing the greatest service to mankind. But the fact is that you cure one disease, you will get another one. You cure the other disease, you will get yet another one. In this way, so long as you understand that the ultimate disease is Bhavaroga. Bhavaroga, as a result of which you are getting this material body, unless you cure this Bhavaroga, what is the point in simply curing one disease after the other? Of course, it doesn't mean that when we are diseased, we shouldn't go to the doctor. After all, even in the process of curing Bhavaroga, you need this body. Therefore, you must take care of this body. But ultimately, we should know that this material body itself is the source of the problem. And until we get rid of this material body itself, we will never be able to reach eternal life. And you cannot get rid of this material body simply by committing suicide. Many times this question is asked. Because if you commit suicide, you will simply get a ghostly body. You will become a ghost. And you will hover on the platform of the subtle body for a long period of time and suffer tremendously. We discussed this last time. So therefore, only understanding that the root cause of all our problems is this material body itself, we have to regain our spiritual position of Satchidananda, then we will come to the understanding of worshipping Krishna, who is Satchidananda Vigraha. So what is the source of this Bhavar, what is the solution to this Bhavaroga? There is a very wonderful shloka in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto. The verse was something like this. Nivritta tarshay rupagiyamanat bhavau shadashotra mano bhiramat kahuttama shloka gunanuvadat puman virajeta vina pashugnat. It is explained that those who are nivritta tarshay, those who are free from all material desires, they like to simply worship and glorify Uttama Shloka, Lord Krishna, who is glorified by the choicest of shlokas. They like to glorify Him and remember Him and talk about Him, because by so doing, they will become freed from this Bhavaroga. Bhavaushadach, Bhava Aushada. So this disease is Bhava, this material existence. And Aushada, Aushada means medicine. So what is the medicine for this material existence? Ka uttama shloka gunanuvadat. That means descriptions of the Lord, hearing His messages, hearing His pastimes, hearing His name. By all these processes, these are all different kinds of medicine, the same medicine. And by taking this medicine regularly, you will be cured of this Bhavaroga. So long as this Bhavaroga is there, there will be so many unlimited kinds of suffering. Sufferings will come in different ways. The solution, the one and only solution to this problem is to hear Krishna Katha. To hear about Krishna. We also hear so many Kathas about the demigods in the Bhagavatam, but all of them are ultimately linked to Krishna. So by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam,
we will be able to get rid of this Bhavaroga disease. See, the ultimate disease is not AIDS, but it is Bhavaroga. So here Lord Krishna is saying, do not become less intelligent. Lord Krishna uses very strong language, Alpa Medhasam. He's saying intelligence means to surrender to Krishna and to worship Him. So therefore He's calling in every page of the Bhagavad Gita, in every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is simply a call to surrender to Lord Krishna and to worship Him. It is amazing that in spite of reading the whole Bhagavad Gita, still people cannot come to this conclusion. Anyone who is sincerely reading the Bhagavad Gita must come to the understanding. Even those who are observing pujas of the demigods in their own homes, you will notice that every ritual or sacrifices that is dedicated to the demigods begins by the invocation of Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan. It is said that any Brahmana, before he begins the sacrifice or ritual or ceremony, he must invoke the presence of Lord Vishnu, otherwise the whole ritual or sacrifice is considered to be a waste. It is considered useless. And at the end of the sacrifice, all the benefits of the sacrifices, they are expected to be offered to Lord Vishnu. So in the beginning there is Lord Vishnu, and in the end there is Lord Vishnu. Because it is only Lord Vishnu who is really the benefactor, the beneficiary of all these yagyas. Even if you go to all the Ganesh Chaturthi celebrations going around that were taking place, if you carefully heard the mantras, and if someone is doing it right, of course these days they play film songs for Ganesh Chaturthi celebrations. So they are not even doing according to Shastra. But if it is done according to Shastra and you hear carefully, you will see Lord Vishnu's name is invoked, Lord Narayan's name is invoked, and at the end they all sing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Have you heard that? So you will see that ultimately what are they saying? The benefits of all these sacrifices are going to the demigods, but the chief recipient is Krishna. So the chief recipient is Krishna or Vishnu, but the demigods, they may get their share of the prasad. But that doesn't mean that the demigods are supreme. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Aham hi sarva yajnanam bharta cha eva prabhu eva cha. He says, I am the beneficiary. All your yajnas are meant simply for me. So even in the worship of demigods, it is Krishna or Vishnu or Narayan everywhere, even for a simple observer. So as devotees, as Krishna conscious devotees, when you go to some ritual or sacrifice for the demigods, try to observe very carefully what the mantras they are being chanted. In the beginning and the end, there will always be Lord Vishnu. So why should there be any doubt in our mind? But because the worshippers of demigods, because of that kind of worship, Krishna gives them that understanding, that vision, so they cannot see through these things. And they think, my demigod is the only Supreme Lord and therefore I must worship Him. So Lord Krishna actually explains that do not try to shake the faith of such people. If they are willing to listen to you, you may try to explain. If you tell them you are less intelligent, that is the last thing you should do, because then they will become very angry. But then at the same time, we are not speaking an untruth. That is what Lord Krishna is saying. Krishna is saying, Alpa Medhasam. And next time when we talk about the demigods, Krishna uses even harsher language, what appears to be harsher language. So for worshippers of demigods, Krishna explains that I am giving them the faith by which they worship the demigods. Yo yo yam yam shadum bhakta. He says, as they want to worship different demigods, I give them that faith. I give them that intelligence. Because he sees this person wants to worship that demigod, he makes his faith very strong. So we should not unnecessarily go and disturb people's faith in the demigods. Rather, if somebody is receptive, if somebody is willing to listen to Krishna conscious philosophy, we may gently go and give it to that person. If that person is very stubborn in his faith, then we should simply just somehow or the other give him some Krishna Kirtan, some Krishna Prasad, and in this way gradually uplift that person. You see, for persons who have no understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they become polytheists. Polytheists means he is also God, all the devatas are God, all gods are the same. So for those who are impersonalists, there is in the Shastra recommendation of Panchopasana. Pancha Upasana, the worship of five. Pancha. Who are those five? Can anyone say? Of course, Vishnu is there, definitely. Apart from Vishnu, Surya, Vishnu, Ganesh, not exactly Lakshmi, Shakti or Kali, and Shiva. So these five, So they think these five, Ganesh is among them. So they think, yes, Ganesh is supreme. So those who are worshipping Shakti, they think Shakti is supreme. Like that, each of them thinks, yes, the worshipper, the demigod whom I am worshipping, is supreme. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Prahlad is describing the processes of bhakti, he says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. These are 9 processes by which you can render bhakti to Krishna. You can render bhakti to the Supreme Lord. But in the very first line he clarifies. He says, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. He doesn't say, he's saying this Vishnu deliberately. Because he knows that tomorrow somebody will say, no, actually what Prahlad meant was Shravanam Kirtanam Kali. Or Shravanam Kirtanam Chandi. Or Shravanam Kirtanam Durga. Or Shravanam Kirtanam Shiva. He says very clearly, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Prabhupada used to comment that at many places in Bengal, they have what is called Kali Kirtan. So Prabhupada says, what is the meaning of this Kali Kirtan? Kirtan means Krishna Kirtan. Kirtan is no other Kirtan possible. Krishna Kirtan means Krishna Kirtan. There is no concept of Kali Kirtan. Because ultimately all glorification is meant for Krishna. Out of ignorance only, we feel that yes, this demigod is supreme and therefore we will worship. So Krishna says, Krishna is neutral. So he says, okay, if you want, then I will give you the strength. But we should not be that neutral. We should have that understanding that Krishna is supreme and we should worship only Krishna. So we will deal more with this subject, not next Wednesday. Next Wednesday we will deal with another shloka. And the time after that we will talk about what kind of people worship the devatas. This is not meant to be a personal affront to those who are worshipping demigods. We should try to see this in a philosophical light. So today we will end early because I was told that it goes on for too long perhaps. So we will try to have some question answers before the darshan opens. And if there are still some question answers left after that, then we will maybe have just one or two after the darshan. Because this is the third lecture on demigods, so maybe some of you have many questions about demigods, and if you would like to clarify them, we have 5 or 7 minutes now.
Just now, while offering prayers to any demigod, first we invoke the name of Vishnu or Narayan. Why not directly Krishna? Why Vishnu or Narayan?
You see, Krishna is the original Vishnu. And many places in the Shastra, even in the Bhagavatam, the word Vishnu is used rather than Krishna. That is because in this world, Krishna appears in the form of Vishnu. Krishna appears as Krishna only in Vrindavan, in the form of his name and in the form of his deity. But in every other form, he is appearing in his 400 form of Vishnu. So in the material world, we are understanding Krishna in the form of Narayan or Vishnu. In the Trinity also, it is Vishnu. It is not directly Krishna. So that is why we find Vishnu mentioned in most of the yajnas, most of the mantras, and also even in the Bhagavatam. Krishna is mentioned directly, of course. But the great devotees, when they prayed, it was the 400 form who came. And it is only when we come to certain sections of the Bhagavatam, particularly the 10th canto and a few others, that we see Krishna in his original 200 form. So because Krishna interacts in this material world through his 400 form, his Vishnu Narayan form, so very often in the mantras, it is this form that is described. But still we should understand Vishnu and Krishna are non-different, although Krishna is the original Vishnu. He is the source of all the Vishnus. Vishnu is also in the category of energy. All the devatas are in the category of energetic. Vishnu is also in the category of energetic. The devatas are in the category of energy. So we should not think Vishnu is an ordinary living being. Although sometimes people think Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. So they think Vishnu is also the same as Brahma and Vishnu. It is said in the Bhagavatam, Ete Chanshakalaha Punsa, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. There are many avatars, there are many incarnations and forms of the Lord. They are either Ansha or they are Kala. Ansha means parts of the Supreme Lord. And Kala means the parts of the part, or the portion of the Supreme Lord.
So all the forms that we have heard about and read about, they are all either portions of Krishna, of the Supreme Lord, or portions of the portions of the Supreme Lord. But Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original Bhagavan from whom all the other avatars, the different manifestations of the Lord are emerging. So it is a very common conception that Krishna comes from Vishnu, but originally Krishna is the source of Vishnu. But when this very same Krishna appears in the material world, he may come through the medium of Vishnu. But that doesn't mean that Vishnu is the origin of Krishna. He is only a via medium for Krishna, but originally Krishna is the source of Vishnu. We are also, actually nowhere in the Shastra is this ever said that Krishna is coming from Vishnu. In the sense that Vishnu is the origin of Krishna. He is a via medium. He appears just like Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. There are many things we may not discuss today. But Krishna is the original Lord. And actually in the Bhagavad Gita and also the Bhagavatam, it is very clearly explained that all the avatars are coming only from Krishna. It is a detailed subject matter. We have actually already discussed this when we discussed the personality of Krishna. So it is a misconception that Vishnu is superior to Krishna. Krishna appeared in Dwapar Yuga, but he is not a creation of Dwapar Yuga. He simply appeared in Dwapar Yuga and then it disappeared. Just like the sun, it appears in the morning and it disappears in the evening. But it doesn't mean that the sun was created in the morning and it doesn't mean that the sun is destroyed in the evening. Exactly like that, Krishna appears at any point of time in Dwapar Yuga. That is also actually described. There are specific times when he comes. And at a specified time, he also disappears. So Krishna is not of this world. He is not a creation of this world. On the contrary, the world is his creation. And he simply comes within his creation at his own sweet will, appears, performs his various pastimes, and then goes away. And for the purpose of maintenance and creation and destruction of this world, he has his agents. And there are different categories of agents. Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu, they're all three his agents and all three are in different categories. His agent for creation is Brahma, who is a category of Jiva, the energy. Lord Shiva is also his energy but in a different category than Brahma. And Lord Vishnu, he is in the same category as Krishna, in the category of energetic. So Lord Krishna takes the form of Lord Vishnu to sustain the whole universe. It is not that Lord Vishnu is the source of Lord Krishna. This is a question that is very, very commonly asked in India. Because the whole thing starts from the Dashavatar of Jayadev Goswami, where people think that actually the Dashavatar is all coming from Vishnu. But actually Krishna is the original candle that lights all the other candles. All the other avatars are manifestations of the Lord. They are like candles. But there is one original candle that lights up all the other candles. And that original candle is Krishna. Right? You'll have to use the mic.
The Yamdutas don't disturb him. Then that person won't be purified, say in one life. Then how is the karma of that particular person decided?
Can you repeat your question?
Anyone who is chanting the name of Lord Hari, you mentioned in your lecture, the Yamdutas don't come and take care of him at the time of death. But it's not necessary that the person will be completely purified at the time of death. Then who decides, how is this karma decided?
You see, the idea is, for one who is chanting the name of Hari, sincerely, one who has become a pure devotee of the Lord, or one who is striving to be a pure devotee of the Lord, sincerely, Krishna takes personal care of such a person. And therefore, he is beyond the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. Then such a person becomes beyond karma. So Krishna takes personal care of him. Do you remember the time when we discussed the shloka on Ananyas Chintayanto Mam Yejana Paryupasate? And we discussed the story of how this devotee, he was doubting whether Krishna personally comes or whether he sends his agent. But for Krishna's pure devotee, Krishna comes personally. And therefore, the Vishnu Dutas couldn't tolerate why the Yamadutas came. Especially in the story of Ajamil, if you are referring to that. They could not tolerate. They said, he is chanting Vishnu's names. So you have no right over him. So it's a guarantee. It's a guarantee. If you're chanting Krishna's names, then Krishna will take care of you.
Mentioned for pure devotees.
Yes.
I am talking about ordinary devotees.
If you're chanting sincerely, don't worry. Krishna will make sure that he takes care. Because it is time for darshan.
Devaki and Vasudev prayed to Lord Brahma that a son, Lord Krishna, should be born to them.
No, they did not pray to Lord Brahma.
And
they prayed to Krishna.
And how can they pray to Krishna that Krishna should be born?
Yes, they say this is called love in Vatsalya Bhav, where the devotee, he wants to become like a parent to Krishna. Of course, Krishna is everyone's father. Aham Bija Pradha Pita. So who can be Krishna's father? But out of love, because the devotee wants to serve Krishna in the mood of parental affection, so Krishna, out of love for his devotee, because Krishna also relishes that kind of love, he accepts the position of being the child of some of his pure devotees.
And furthermore, they got Krishna as child, but they didn't have the good luck of seeing the beautiful leelas Krishna did. That happened in the house of Nanda and Yashoda.
Yes, that is because they only wanted Krishna as a son. But Yashoda and Nanda wanted to serve Krishna as a son. So they got the chance to serve him very nicely when Krishna was transferred by Nanda Maharaj, was taken from Mathura to Gokul. So Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they got the chance to actually serve baby Krishna till his youth. And of course, Devaki and Vasudeva also got a chance to serve Krishna later on when Krishna came back to Dwarka.
But why they were deprived of?
Why did?
When they got the benediction that Krishna, Lord Krishna was born to them. But why they were deprived of serving Lord Krishna as their child?
You see, the pure devotees can never be deprived of serving Krishna. Because wherever they are, they are always serving Krishna. Service is of two types. Service to Krishna. It is service in meeting and service in separation. So it is not that Devaki and Vasudev were not serving Krishna when Krishna was away. In their hearts, they were always serving Krishna. But they got the opportunity to serve Krishna physically only for a very short while. While Krishna was there, only for a few moments before he was taken by Nanda Maharaj. They asked Krishna, "You please come as my son." He came as his son, as their son, and they went. But all the more, this shows the greatness of Krishna's pure devotees. That Devaki and Vasudev waited for so many years. Six of their children were mercilessly killed by Kansa. And they knew that Kansa was waiting simply to kill even the eighth child. But in spite of that, in spite of knowing that Krishna would be separated from them, still they were willing. So the pure devotees simply want to fulfill Krishna's will. Because it was Krishna's will, he had to perform his pastimes, and his pastimes were to be performed initially not in Mathura but in Gokul. So they took him there. And out of parental affection, that was the extent of their sacrifice. You can see the sacrifice of a pure devotee. They were concerned out of parental affection for Krishna. When devotees are in this mood, they think of Krishna as an ordinary child who is dependent upon them for protection. They never see Krishna as a supreme lord and master who can protect them. So out of parental affection, they thought, now Kansa is going to come and try to kill our child Krishna, so we must protect him. The only way we can protect him is if we take him far away from here and leave him with Nanda Maharaj, far away in Gokul and Vrindavan. And there he will be safe. So that is the reason, out of love for him also, they took him away. That is the meaning of real parental love in Krishna consciousness. If that is what is good for Krishna, that is the bhava. Yes?
The devatas like Lord Ganesha and so many others are there. They are super beings and they too may have some material desire. So is there a pure devotee of Lord Krishna? Is he more exalted than the devatas?
Well, you see, some of the demigods are pure devotees. Like Yamaraj, Ganesha is also a pure devotee. Brahmaji glorifies him. We read that shloka from the Brahma Samhita, in which Brahma says that Lord Ganesh always keeps the lotus feet of Lord Krishna on his tumuli and is always praying to him. So like that, there are many pure devotees, demigods who are pure devotees. But generally speaking, we discussed this last time also and the time before that, that the pure devotee is considered superior to the devatas, the general devatas, for several reasons. Number one, the demigods, they are empowered to give benedictions only according to the law of karma. They cannot give anything beyond the law of karma. They are attendants of the laws of karma. And they themselves are bound by the laws of karma. Unless, of course, that devata is a pure devotee. Otherwise, generally, the devatas are also bound by the law of karma. So how can they free someone else from the law of karma? But the pure devotees of the Lord, they are beyond the laws of karma themselves, and they can help us also to become free from the laws of karma. That is the glory of the pure devotee. We also saw two Wednesdays back, there was one little story in which we saw that, three different stories actually, of how the great demigods, they are actually dancing to the tune of Krishna. You remember those stories? Say Indra was lifting, Indra was pouring down rain upon Vrindavan when Krishna was living Govardhan Hill. Brahma was bewildered in the Brahma Vimohan Leela when he stole the calves away. And Lord Shiva was also bewildered by the Mohini Avatar. So there are so many different narrations in the scriptures when we see how the demigods are completely bewildered when confronted with the power of Krishna. But that very same Krishna, to whose tune everyone dances, including the very powerful demigods like Lord Shiva, that very Lord Krishna, when he appears as a small child in Vrindavan, and the elderly gopis of Vrindavan sing and they clap their hands, then very awkwardly this baby child Krishna dances to their tune. So this is the power of the pure devotee. The pure devotee can make Krishna dance to her tune, and Krishna makes the whole world dance to his tune. So we can see very clearly that the pure devotee is much more powerful than the devatas. Yes, please.
He appeared as in a four-armed form. Why didn't appear in a two-armed form?
Initially to demonstrate to all of us that he is a supreme lord. Because if he appeared only as a child, then people would think, oh, he's just an ordinary child. But to demonstrate to all of us that yes, he's the very same supreme lord who has come. He's not an ordinary child.
But why he didn't appear in a original form, means as a Sri Krishna, I mean, in two arms?
He did eventually. He did. But as I said, the Lord normally appears in the 400 form in the material world, because that is the way he performs his functions here. People are more familiar in this world with the 400 form. So he had to demonstrate that he is the self-same Supreme Lord who has come. It's none other. And as far as Krishna in his self-same form, when he appeared finally on the battlefield of Kurukshetra also, he was present in his two-armed self-same form. So he wanted to demonstrate that he is the same Supreme Lord who has appeared now through the womb of Devaki. Any one last one or two questions, if there are any more?